You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
If you could change one thing about your home, what would it be? A new kitchen, a new master bath, maybe put in a pool. What if you could do it with no money out of pocket and cheaper monthly payments? SaveWithConrad.com can help, and you can even skip your next two house payments. NMLS number 65084, Equal Housing Lender, SaveWithConrad.com.
What is going on, DDP Snake Pit fans? It's time for another weekly edition of the Snake Pit. I'm John Alba, and I'm joined by two bona fide Hall of Famers here, Jake the Snake Roberts, Diamond Dallas Page. My friends, how are we?
Well, it's not your lighting, and it's not your TV. It's not what you're watching it through. I really am this dark.
Jake, I don't remember. I guess back in the 80s. Back in the 80s, when you had to get it, when your job is to be tan, unless
right,
you take
right,
her,
right.
Who could get away with being white as a ghost. But everybody else, you just look better tan on camera. And I walked in and I go, ooh, the Beach Boys back in town.
Oh, man.
where were you just
I was in Destin, man. And I tell you, this is from one day.
Wow.
One day. I got that perfect skin for tanning.
You know? Yeah, and I'd be bright red.
Yeah, he'd be purple.
I always said I was looking for the perfect color, reddish brown. I would get a little tan. But yeah, that's a great area.
Hogan said one time, I remember him saying this in the locker room, if you got a choice of going to the gym or the tanning bed, which one do you do?
No, for him, it was the tanning sure.
Bed. Yeah.
And you look better. Bagwell said the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, for me, those tanning beds are like the worst thing you can do. I got shit cut out of me all over. And a lot of it had to do with the sun because I was a surfer as a kid and a lifeguard. So I never put any block on.
No.
Oh, my God. My face would get so red. And at 17 years old, you know, from squinting on the beach, you'd have the lines.
Oh, my God.
It's like, what?
That'd be awesome. What a gimmick you could have.
we're building a place. We just finally got through permits and everything in Panama City Beach.
Oh, okay.
And it's going to be called Page's Retreat. And my wife and I are building we're going to rent it out, you know, because there's four floors. The fourth floor is ours. But the whole house, it's going to be pretty amazing.
That's awesome.
Jake is just down there.
I was just there, and the view is incredible.
Yeah, so I mean, it's right on the beach. But it's also 15 feet above sea level.
Yeah, I hope
which
so.
Is, yeah, well, and then I'm going up another 15 feet.
I want to see it during the hurricane.
Hey, dude, the bottom floor, because you have 15 feet, you can build a bottom out. The bottom floor is, I made it all some concrete.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's all sealed. If it goes over 30 feet, we're all screwed anyway.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All the way here in Georgia. Yeah,
Montgomery will be underwater.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be a bad thing for Montgomery.
Well, I was in Diamond Dallas Page territory just the other night. I was in Asbury Park, and I was at the Wonder Bar. And Jake, I kid you not, they got this big old Diamond Dallas Page action figure right in front of the stage overlooking all the performers. So, DDP,
wow.
your roots are cemented, my friend, in the Jersey Shore.
My buddy Lance Larson and his girl Debbie, they own the Wonder Bar.
Very nice.
And back in the day, Lance used to actually date Linda for the longest time. Yeah.
Wow.
And what a great musician he is. But they're great entertainment down there, man. Some of the Bruce Springsteen would be there all the time.
All the time,
man.
Mm-hmm.
Not the Wonder Bar, but at the Pony.
Yep.
I saw him back in 80, right before the Born in the USA tour took off. I saw him there because I had a club that was just down one block away. So on Sundays, it was teen night. So I'd go down and, you know, get a few drinks at the Pony and watch. I saw Bruce 18 weeks in a row.
Wow.
Play with a band called Cats and the Smooth Surface.
Cats and the Smooth, yep.
And Bobby Bandiera, who was the lead singer for them, would end up becoming part of the E Street Band.
Wow.
And a little bit of Jersey Shore history. Bon Jovi came in my club when he was 15.
Wow. Because
we were live music too. And it was huge. We put like 1,500 people there on the weekends. And he would come down and, can you please come down and hear me play? And, you know, eventually I went down there because it was like three blocks away called the, God, I can't remember the name of that club down there he was at, but Hotel California, that's what it was called. And when I went there, you know, of course he's playing. And there's only 40 people in there, but 25 of them were women and about 15 of them were really hot. Because he was this kid, he had such magnetism back then.
Yeah.
And I eventually put him, I got my owner to put him in the club and he put him, but he didn't put him on the main stage. I wanted to like build the night around him because it would be a year or so later, he got the big contract. And next thing you know, 2 years later, I guess a year and a half later, Slippery When Wet came out. And
wow.
Diamond Dallas Page discovered John Bon Jovi. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise.
Hey, I've got so many pictures with him over.
He does.
We were talking about Tony Pallagrossi, me and you, before we went on. And Tony was one of the big, still is, one of the biggest promoters in the state of New Jersey. And he was really good friends with John because he was managing Hotel California. And in the beginning, before he came over and worked with me. And, man, we went to see Bon Jovi in, I want to say it was 86 or 87. I can't remember exactly what year that was. But whatever it was, Slippery When Wet tour was on for, I mean, those guys were on the road for 18 straight months.
Oh.
And when we got, I have a picture of John right in the beginning of that tour and at the end of the tour.
Oh, yeah.
And he looks like two different people. He is so wore out. But when we got to, you know, we got our tickets. And Tony was the one who got him. And now we've got backstage. And then you go to backstage, and then you went, that was number 7 backstage. And you went to 6 backstage, the 5, the 4. Until you got to the real backstage, you never met Bon Jovi. Mm. And I'm thinking, I said to Tony, I said, if this guy even, if he even acts like we exist, when we see him, he's over with me for life because at this point he's a god, you know. And he came in, he's like, Tony, and we're becoming, he goes, Paige.
Oh, that's like, awesome. Oh. How cool is that? That's great.
It was super cool, you know.
That's
awesome. You're on the road and you know this, Jake, and you've been on there for a long time. A friendly face, like someone you really care about, you know, that comes and shows up.
Yeah.
You want to spend that time.
Damn
again.
Right, you do.
Yeah. You know?
You get a breath of air, you don't have to act.
No. There you go. Exactly.
You don't have to play it.
Well, a guy that you both encountered on the road quite a bit is Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig, and that's who we're going to be talking about on this week's episode of DDP Snake Pit. This is not an episode on the Jersey Shore music scene, even though I would love to do an episode on the Jersey Shore music scene with you, Dallas. Yeah. But Kurt Hennig, man, we talk about one of the all-time greats that, truthfully, I believe is still underappreciated among many wrestling fans, because I do believe he really is one of the best to ever step foot in a ring.
Absolutely.
Let's start with you, Jake. Did you ever encounter Kurt's dad, Larry the Axe Hennig, early on in your career?
Boy, did I.
That's the axe.
One of my first bad experiences in the ring was with Mr. Axe himself. Mm-hmm. And I remember it being on Tampa television because at the time I was just breaking in. Yes. And I had not trained for it. I just went for it. And when he hit me with that axe, I thought I was dead. Because he went through me completely. Oh. I think his arm came out the other side. You know?
He was a bit out. What now?
He was 300 pounds.
Right. 300 pounder.
And he's that short, stocky 300 pounder, brother. And when he came with it, brother, you had no choice. You were gone. And I remember hitting the mat and I bounced. You know? It's not a good sign when you bounce. And he covered me and said, "Hey, kid, thanks." And I was like, ah. Because he cleaned my clock and put my clock away. But, you know, that's what I deserved. I shouldn't even have been out there at the time. And, you know, that was my first experience. I remember seeing him in Cauliflower Alley years later. And we talked for a few minutes. And, of course, Kurt had already been gone then. And it was tough, man.
Yeah.
Kurt Hennig was so good. So good. He was, he had the mechanics fine tuned. And he could shoot on you a little bit too if you wanted to. But he would bump his ass off.
Man.
He bumped and he gave you bumps you'd never seen before.
Let me ask you, Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was, before Dolph Ziggler, there was Kurt Hennig.
Same. But he was a strong cat, man. And, you know, he was a river, too.
Oh, yeah.
And he played a lot of ribs and had a lot of fun. But, you know, him and I kind of mirrored each other because I think I could have done so much more, and I think Kurt could have been so much more. He would have been a great Intercontinental champion.
Well, he was Intercontinental.
Yeah, for a short time.
World champion.
Yeah, but for a short time. He deserved one of those long runs.
Right, I agree.
You know, and because he could go out and wrestle. He could damn sure wrestle, man, and he could get it done. But his ribbon was, wow, it was off the charts. I'll tell you guys about one night. Now, this can't go any further than right here, okay? Okay.
Just
right here.
You guys understand that, right?
Yeah, like,
just right here.
Zip it, okay? What happened was we were going to do television in San Antonio, Texas. And we went. Well, everybody was there. And lo and behold, there was a dance club down the street.
Oh, what?
A dance club. And everybody went. I mean, everybody. Vince was there.
Oh, my God.
Road Warriors. Perfect. Beefcake. The Samoans. I mean, the list went on and on. And I went in for a little bit, but I got out of there because I seen trouble coming. Because it was 2 o'clock.
Wait a second.
And I ran.
You walked away from trouble back then?
Yes, I did. Because I had something in my pocket.
Oh, okay. You know,
and I didn't want any problem, you know. And the reason I left was they had taken over the bar.
I'll bet.
It was 2 o'clock and they were closing. And Vince said, "No, you're not. Guys, get what you want." And guys just went up to the bar and started grabbing bottles.
Wow.
You know, I'm like, holy shit. And I stayed for a little bit more until Beefcake suplexed one of the girls on the stage.
What?
Suplexed her. Oh, yeah. And she got up.
She didn't sell it.
Then the Road Warriors got up and did their finish on the stage. Hulk diving across and hitting a girl.
Oh, my goodness.
It got really bad. it got so bad that when I was leaving, the cops were already there. But they wouldn't go in. They were afraid. We aren't going in there. We'll get them as they come out. So as I'm there, Sergeant Slaughter pulls up in his Cadillac, and there's a cop car blocking the door. And I'm just trying to, excuse me, sir, I want to get out of here. I don't want to be involved in this, you know. And the cop's like, go ahead, get in, get out of here.
Mr. You know? Innocent.
Mr. Innocent, meet me. I'm a snake.
You're a saint and a snake, no doubt about that.
Then Slaughter decides that cop car needs to move.
Oh, no.
So he hit it with his Cadillac and pushed it all the way through so he could have the front spot in front of the door. He got out of the car and walked in. The cops never said a word to him. Well, I left at that point. I heard he got really bad. But at 3 o'clock, they were still in there. But the girls had left. Somebody was smart enough to say, well, listen, if we want to get them out of there, get the girls out of there, they're going to leave. And that's what happened. So they got the girls out of there. So everybody said, oh, screw it. Let's go back to the hotel. Oh, well, they went back to the hotel and they decided they were going to break into Flair's room. So they broke into Flair's room. Perfect put Flair's robe on. He was doing stuff. they spread the beds apart and they started shooting on each other. Well, it wound up, Perfect wound up fighting Vince.
What?
Yeah, they were wrestling. Shoot wrestling.
Okay.
And Perfect cross faces Vince.
Oh, God.
And Vince won't give up. So Perfect grinds him even more. And Perfect had this big Rolex on.
Oh, my.
And it just so happened that it was right across Vince's ear. And about the third time he clinched down, blood shot across the room. It busted Vince's ear all to hell. Yeah, he made a mess in the room. Then they broke into the bar thing, and Flair got stuck with about a $600 bill on the bar. And
holy.
Yeah, it was quite the day. And then the next day, television, which you got to be there at noon, right? I got there at noon. It was a ghost town. Nobody was there. Vince showed up at 4 o'clock.
Oh, my.
With a great big thing on his ear. His ear was broken in half. Yeah, it was a bad night in San Antonio.
Well, that speaks to the how genuinely skilled Kurt Hennig was.
He was, man.
He could shoot. He could do it. And Dallas, he ends up having a run in AWA, and you end up having him briefly part of your Diamond Exchange faction. What are your recollections of that?
Well, the first day that I was there, you got to remember, I come with this big trunk. Remember the old trunks had a little lock in the front, and flipped it open? Because I had so much shit. And I had five different outfits, leather coats, chaps. I mean, I had every gimmick look, leopard skin coat, zebra skin, boots.
Perfect heel. Ribby, did he?
No. He actually
loved it.
We sat across from each other in the locker room, and about we shot four shows a day. And he was sitting the show, 1 hour shows back then for ESPN. And he goes, do it, Diamond. I go, do what? He goes, do it, that thing you do. I go, do what? He goes, good God. And I went, good God. He goes, man, I love that. Never heard anybody do that before. So later that day, we went, you know, after we went to the bar. And, you know, we just started drinking. And he was like, listen, you ain't going to be here long. Like, so many people thought the way, as polished as my gimmick was from day one with the DDP rings, I mean, I had every gimmick you could have. And they were like, you ain't going to be here long. Vince is going to pick you up. Of course, that never happened. And at 6'4", put cowboy boots on me, I'm damn close to 6'7". So I was never going to get that opportunity. But that's what was going, you know, through my head. And that's what Kurt said to me. And he said, you're going to make more relationships here at the bar than you ever will in the ring,
yep,
in the locker room.
Yep.
you know, being on the road, and there was no road. I came in for one day. I filmed four shows. That's what it was, my first 9 months in professional wrestling. And so I got picked up by Florida Championship Wrestling, too. And then I would work one more day there, a week, though. But Kurt, and you were talking about just, you know, what a great – he had such a ridiculous high wrestling IQ.
Yeah.
A lot like Jake in that respect, too.
Well, he was around some of the most unbelievable wrestlers ever. I mean, Billy Robinson, Fern Gagne. Right down the list, man. I mean, my God, those guys were, you know, animals, man.
And he took bumping to a different level. Yeah. But what a lot of people don't realize, a lot of his bumps were really calibrated. Like, I can remember seeing him get the punch and go over the top rope. And it looked like, oh, my God, what a bump. But if you watch him in slow motion, like I did, as he went over there, he had his hand on this rope. Yep. Which you never really saw. And as he fell, he grabbed this rope. As he kept going, he'd held this rope. So by the time he got to the, it just
slowed him down.
Like, I studied him, not as much as I studied Jake, but he was one of my five guys that I that were part of who Diamond Dallas Page eventually became. Jake, Perfect, Savage, DiBiase, and Funk.
Yeah.
You know, like that's like, that was like a medley of guys that I loved to watch in the ring, the way they told stories verbally and, you know, physically. And it was a point in time where the Axe had brought up, like, you guys would be really good together, because he hadn't gone, and Kurt didn't look like he would later look as Mr. Perfect.
Yeah.
He's still, his body he was working on, that came from Scott Hall, because Scott Hall looked
beast.
Like
300 pounds.
Yeah, I'm just, you know, muscles. And, you know, he was, you know, one of those big muscled up guys when he started. And he's the one who got Perfect in the gym and working on his body, because his body was nowhere in the beginning. He just, but he could work his ass off already. And, of course, it never happened with me and him going in, but we kept our relationship. And if I went to go see him when he got to the WWF, he would always hook up with me. You know, and there was no cell phones back then.
No.
So you had to catch the guys, like, on a beeper or, you know, from their home phone, and they remembered and they got back to you. And Kurt was one of those guys. And so it was great watching him go through. I love how they brought him in, the WWF, with all of the things that you see the things that you see on Instagram today, or where they take the basketball and they throw the basketball and it ends in the hoop, a lot of that shit's gimmicked.
Yeah.
Henning's, none of it was. Everything you saw him do,
he could do.
He did. He was like the most all-around athlete ever. From being in a bar, playing darts, to shuffleboard, you know,
he was the best at everything.
He was. He really was, Mr. Perfect.
Would you guys argue those are some of the most memorable vignettes in wrestling history? Because I genuinely think they are.
Oh, yeah.
I think as far as a vignette, it's the best. The only person I would put up there as far as, like, vignettes that were live, of course, Ted.
Yeah.
With the kicking of the basketball.
Yeah.
RVD, when RVD's a kid, and, you know.
I loved it when DiBiase went and had the pool cleared out.
Oh, yeah, right.
That was a shoot. They paid the guy off, and the guy made all those kids get out, and they're all standing on the fence holding and looking. Imagine the heat he got there.
Oh, God. Yo. To me, that's another guy. Ted DiBiase, like that guy is another guy who should have been a five-time world champion.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was a great gimmick he had, because he was treated like royalty and first class, so a lot of the boys were in the back.
Yeah.
But, I mean, those two guys, you know, friggin' amazing. You know, great promos, and, you know, could deliver as good as anybody probably ever.
Kurt could get in the ring and wrestle anyone. It didn't matter if they were 6'10 and 400 pounds or 160 pounds, and he would make that match happen. And that, to me, tells me how good you are.
Sure.
You know, if you can wrestle everybody and still push it and make it happen, then you're good.
And the thing about that, Jake, is he wasn't just working with everybody. He was working everywhere because he was always out on the road. And if you're out on the road all the time, well, we want to hook you up here at DDP Snake Pit. This episode's brought to you by Car Shield, which makes it easy and affordable to protect your car from expensive repairs. And that
just
for starters, Car Shield is the number one auto protection company in the U.S. and offers protection plans for around $100 a month. The plans cover more parts than ever before, whether your car has 5,000 miles or if you're like Dallas and you're like Jake, 150,000 miles when you're making the towns. And it's so simple to get your car fixed. When you need a repair, you get to choose the mechanic and Car Shield's administrators handle the rest. That is it. You just tell them, hey, this is what I want. This is what I need. The paperwork's done by them. The headaches are taken care of by them. It is fantastic. And if your car breaks down, you're stuck on the side of the road, plans through Car Shield also include coast-to-coast roadside assistance. And here is the best part. You get your coverage today, you're going to lock in your price right now, and it's never going to go up. Dallas, how valuable is that if you're out on the road?
All it has to do is one time breakdown, and you'll be buying Car Shield.
You know, and the bottom line is, which blows AAA out of the water. You know, for years I had AAA, but there's no reason to have it if you've got Car Shield. We're doing 100, 200, 300 miles on the road, and a lot of times that's with your own car.
Yeah.
You know, especially back in the day when they were trying to save money. So it's on you. Your car breaks down, and they're not only going to pick you up, get you to where you need to get to, but they're also going to hook you up and get your car fixed.
But they're going to let you choose your own mechanic, which is unheard of.
Ridiculous.
It's unheard of.
This is one of those things that if you don't lock it down and check it out, just go to what's the site where they can get that all, John?
So Car Shield will help you protect your wallet. You go to carshield.com/podcast to start your plan and lock in that pricing forever. That's carshield.com/podcast. A deductible may apply, but it is so worth it, Dallas.
No, I'd be all over it.
I'm getting on it.
I'm getting it for my own self, but I've been all over it on the road.
Oh, God, yeah.
When we were doing those serious towns, man. Like today, WWE is just back on the road now. But AEW, they don't even know what that's like. They go out for 3 days, think, oh, I'm on the road. Like, no, you're not really.
You're not.
You're on a vacation, and you got to work when you get to the vacation.
Sometimes.
Well, sometimes.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
check out Car Shield. Absolutely.
It's a no-brainer.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
Hey, one of the things you're talking about traveling, I know you got a few towns you want to let people know about.
Oh, yeah.
Ric Flair, we've got his big show up there at StarCast. So we're going to be up there for, what's the date on that, John? It's the end of the month. I know that.
So StarCast is going to run from July 29th through July 31st.
Yeah.
And the roast of Ric Flair is going to be July 29th.
Yes.
We got some panels on the 30th and 31st. I'm going to be hosting a panel with Matt Hardy about mental health and addiction and wrestling, which is going to be awesome. And then at night, right after that panel, July 31st, Ric Flair's last match, which is just the card for that is stacked, man. It is stacked.
Yeah, I will actually be one of the roasters.
Hell yeah.
Got a lot of good stuff. Getting ready.
Oh, my God.
To roast the man. Then we're going to be out there. If you want to get your autograph signed earlier, get to the head of the line. There's a place they can get their autographs and pictures and stuff ahead of time already down. Is it you know what that is?
Starcast.com's got all the details that you need on all.
Okay, then you can go there and get that. Wow. So I'll be there for that for that weekend, and then I'm going to be headed to September 24th out in LA at the LAX Fan Fest. I'll be there on the 24th of September from 10 to 1. What about you, Jake?
Oh man, the weekend that Flair's doing the Starcast, unfortunately I can't be there because I'm going to be in lovely Raleigh, North Carolina doing GalaxyCon.
Nice.
That's another loaded card, man. It's 3 days, 29th, 30th, and 31st. 24th, I'll be in San Antonio doing a nice gig. And, you know, it just keeps rolling, man. I'm so grateful for everybody that drags me around, helps me out. I'll be at Madison Square Garden on the 13th of August, right across the street.
Oh, across the street.
Yeah, across the street, Madison Square Garden. There's a big store there. Be signing autographs. Then I go to Pikeville, Kentucky on the 20th of August, and it just keeps happening.
Well, the last thing, Jake, I know you're about to do this. If you go to DiamondDallasPage.com, you can actually get signed autographs personalized.
Yeah.
And
my site will be starting up real soon.
So, be conscious. Probably be up there by the time this airs, next week. Yeah, so go to jakesnakeroberts.com or diamonddallaspage.com if you want personalized autographs. Okay, let's keep going, bro.
Let's keep
back
going.
To Mr. Perfect.
So Mr. Perfect has a little run here in WWF from around 88 into 91, but in 91, he suffers a back injury, and he actually has to step away from the ring for a year. He works as a color commentator with Vince, and he's the executive consultant to Ric Flair. We all remember when Flair debuts, wins the championship. Kurt's right there behind him, just egging him on in that famous promo that he cuts. What'd you think of Kurt stepping into these non-wrestling roles? Because I have to imagine that bit at him as such a worker and a guy who wants to be in there. Now he has to find a different way to utilize his talents.
It wasn't easy for him. You know, it's not easy anytime you step away from the ring. That's the bottom line, you know, and especially someone like Kurt who hadn't gotten what he was capable of, but I thought he did a pretty damn good job, you know, especially him and Flair together. That was money. That was really money.
I totally agree. I enjoyed him together. And I really liked him as a color commentator too. You know,
he's quick.
He's very quick witted, but you know, out of that, he worked on his body, and he got to come into WCW. It was years later.
Yeah.
And I think he, you know, where he was, he was still a hell of a worker, man. I had it up on my Instagram site or my Facebook, can't remember which one it was, but Perfect doing the Perfect Plex to a 7'2", 500-pound Big Show with the arch and the whole deal, boy. Just that in itself was spectacular.
Unbelievable. I've never seen that.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
Yeah, well, you said he would take an additional 4 years off after attempting a brief comeback. His body was really in tough shape, but he does find his way to WCW in 1997. And Eric Bischoff and I actually just covered this past week on 83 Weeks. We talked about Bash at the Beach 97, and you get a chance to work with Kurt right off the bat. He debuts on the June 30th, 1997 edition of Nitro, and a couple weeks later, he's the mystery partner with you against Randy Savage and Scott Hall. But after a miscommunication, he ends up shoving you. He walks out on the match, and you get pinned. This was looking back on it, because I watched it back, this was a bit of an odd way to debut Kurt in WCW, in my opinion. If he was going to be the mystery partner for you, why wouldn't you wait to debut him at the pay-per-view as a surprise for everybody?
That I didn't understand. Did you ask Eric?
I did ask that. I did ask Eric.
And he was the head booker. What did he say?
He just said, well, you know, we probably discussed a few other ideas, but that was the one that we best thought would work. And it just that didn't make sense to me.
In that scenario, being a mystery partner, and I know I'm going to get screwed by him, but that's what set us up to working together. And later on, at Starrcade, I would take the, because he would become the United States champion, and I would win the title from him at Starrcade.
Oh, wow.
Which was huge for my career. You know, getting you know, getting to win it from someone, you know, of such, you know, Hall of Famer, and, you know, everybody held Kurt in the highest regard as far as a worker, a fun guy to hang out with, but a quality person too. I mean, he was a real good dude.
Did he express excitement about getting to work with you upon coming in? Because he's the first guy you're working with.
Pretty crazy to me, you know, because we go back to, you know, from me managing for a moment in the AWA right before he left for the WWF. And for me to actually be out there, again, one of the guys that were part of my, you know, my five guys that I studied the most to want to be a little bit like him, a little bit like Funk, a little bit like Savage, a lot like Jake, because it was just a lot of the, you know, the studying and putting together who would be Diamond Dallas Page. And right at that time, all of those had merged together. And literally, I would be out there working with them. And 97 was my best year ever. And I'm like, I am on the same par with him right now. Like, wow.
And I'm like, going over.
Yeah, and going over, and where it means something in this spot. But I'm working, like, Canyon was one of my favorite people to work with because it was like a younger version of myself. You know, 6'3" he was, and, you know, 235, and just everything, and the way we moved and danced, it was so easy with him. And, you know, it was also like that with Raven and Mark Merrow. There were certain guys that I had really great chemistry with, but going out there and being able to work with a guy that you've implemented a lot of his stuff. You know what I mean?
Implemented is another word for stone.
he's probably like, wait a minute, I've seen this before. Where did this come from?
You just hit my fucking spot, you asshole.
You know, I just did it a little bit different. And I would never be the bumper don't want to be. But I did. I did go over that top rope, and as I learned that there was little things that I took from him that were really, like, he would take a bump where he'd take it to his back and he'd flip to his face.
Yeah.
Like, those are the kind of things that I could do that really make the guy you're working with look great. Jake was like that. I was like that. Kurt was like that. We made the other guy look great. All you had to watch is my match with Goldberg at Halloween Havoc. And I made Goldie look like Godzilla. And he was, kind of to a degree. But I'd rather take my own bump make you look better. You know? And again, Kurt was one of those guys I could be with out there. And it just felt like, wow. First of all, it felt really amazing to feel like, you know, I've gotten to that spot, you know, 9 years later.
Yeah.
Where I'm working with a guy that I look up to, you know, as a worker and a human being, it's a mind fuck, you know, like, because you're like, all the work paid off.
I always felt like his WCW run, he maybe got a little lost in the shuffle. He had the U.S. title run, as you said. He had a quick run with the Horsemen, and then he gets shifted into the NWO, but he's kind of a periphery player, but he's a guy with legitimate star power. Do you agree with that assessment? And if so, why do you think that might have been?
I think he's, like you said, he got lost in the shuffle. You know, some guys, including myself, we just don't speak up when we should. We don't go in and banter with the boss when we should. Some people speak up if they don't feel like they're, and I just never was like that. I just felt like, well, I'm going to do what the boss wants. And in reality is, you got to go in there and bark.
If I didn't bark, I never would have made shit.
Yeah, exactly. But I never did. And that was one of my big, big problems. You know, Vince used to tell me, Jake, why don't you come up here on your days off and we'll sit down and talk. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I've been on the road for 60 days. I haven't seen my wife or my children. If I come up here and see you, I'll be seeing a damn divorce lawyer, you know? But years later, I found out that Hogan and Savage both had an apartment in Stamford. I wonder what that was for.
If someone relies on you financially, your spouse, your child, anyone, life insurance gives you the peace of mind that they'll have a financial cushion if something ever happens to you. By making it easy to compare your options from top companies, Goliath Life helps make sure you're not paying a penny more than you have to for the life insurance coverage you need to protect those you love. At GoliathLife.com, you can compare personalized quotes from top companies to find your lowest price. The process is fast and easy with no hidden fees, upsells, or hassles. Goliath Life is your one-stop shop to find the life insurance you need at the right price. Head to GoliathLife.com to get your free life insurance quotes and see how much you can save. That's GoliathLife.com.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
I want to ask you about this, Dallas, because this is crazy, and we found this in our research, so props to Richard for this, but your last match with Curt Hennig was a tag match on Thunder in Birmingham, Alabama, and it is you, Bam Bam Bigelow, and Canyon defeating Curt and Barry Windham. Talk about talent in one match on an episode of Thunder. How about that?
Well, that the whole thing... The Jersey Triad, me, Bam Bam, and Canyon, was kind of like trying to do, like the first people that I saw do this was the Freebirds, you know, and where Michael would act as a manager occasionally, you know what I mean? He would also get in and work too, but they would work two out of three. So, you know, I'd worked with Barry countless times. Matter of fact, I got knocked out in a match with Barry very early on in my career. I mean, maybe I'd been wrestling 6 months and I took some bump and it knocked me out. It was really the first time it happened. You were out on your feet.
Oh yeah.
It's scary as shit, man. Because all of a sudden
it's a wonderful world.
You wake up, you're in the middle, you're still moving.
Yeah.
But you're wake up in the middle of the ring and I'm like,
what am I doing here?
Wow, man! It's like it's just a really, I can't even explain how weird that feeling is. And I said, Barry, I have no idea where I am. Something had to happen, man. I have no idea where I am. He just held on to me. He goes, "Don't worry, kid.
Yeah,
I got you." Like he knew immediately what happened because he saw whatever bump I took, and he realized, okay,
You'll see it in people's eyes, man.
Right, Barry Windham was one. When you look back at his work.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
I was very fortunate to work with Barry Windham when he was very young in Florida. And Barry and I tore the house down every damn night. You know, we'd do 40 minutes. Then Dusty and Kevin Sullivan would go out and do 7 minutes. I haven't got the blood stopped, you know, yet. They're already back. You know, from their match, I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I hadn't even got the blood stopped yet. But it was great, man. Barry helped me a lot. I learned a lot from Barry. I think we both learned from each other. And I remember one of the greatest compliments I ever got was in Tampa, Florida. Back there, up when you'd go watch the matches from up on the top there in the armory.
Sportatorium?
In the armory.
Oh, armory. Okay.
And Terry Funk walked up to me after I had a match with Barry, and he goes, kid, it's good to know that I'll be passing this business off to guys like you and Barry.
That's very cool.
That's how it comes.
And I didn't know what to fucking say.
Yeah.
I did not know what to say. And, God.
That's awesome. Oh,
yeah. Hell of a compliment, man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Barry was, I mean, you talk about natural.
Oh.
You know, second degree, you know, coming up with Mulligan.
Yeah.
I love Blackjack Mulligan. Oh. Man. That guy had him and Wahoo had the biggest hands that I've ever seen besides
scariest hands.
Andre and Big Show. Big Show has a monster catcher's mitt as well. But those two together, you know, and you know us, it was like, you know, to me, I knew we didn't have to do a lot, you know, because
go out and play,
you know, just go out there and have fun.
Yeah. Well, fast forwarding here real quick, Kurt ends up leaving WCW in the summer of 2000. He'd go to work some indies, did a shot with XWF, and he actually, and I'm so glad he got this before he passed, he got to return to the WWF at the Royal Rumble in 2002. You're there as well, Dallas. Quick little run here for him. It only lasts until May, but that must have been really nice to have him back there in that environment, getting an opportunity to have one more shot. What do you remember that run meaning to him?
God, no, I don't remember much about that. That wasn't my favorite time, you know, in the business. But getting to see him and spend some time with him, I know we had a few laughs, we had a few cocktails, and you know, like I said, we started at the bar. You know, that's where we really bonded and got to know each other. And I can remember I was on the road with Kevin and Scott and you know, X-Pac, and I was the fourth guy in the car because they were all my boys, you know. So anytime we could be in a spot where we could drive together, I would jump in with them. And we were up in the Midwest, and we went to go see Kurt at one of his favorite watering holes up there in, I think he was from Michigan, but I'm not exactly sure where he was exactly from, but it was one of those towns. And Wayne Bloom was there, and you know, they had 15 dartboards around the wall, the pool table. It was a huge gin mill, and we got to spend some, you know, some time and some laughs there. You know, just remember to me as just a super great guy.
Yeah, we ended up losing him far too early in 2003. He was just 44 years old, but he does get inducted in the WWE Hall of Fame in 2007 by one of his longtime friends, Wade Boggs. And he's remembered as an all-time legend in this industry. When you think of one moment or one match or one element of his lasting legacy, what comes to mind for each of you guys?
Jake, what do you got?
I used to love the bump he took, man, when he'd do the 360.
Yeah.
He developed that before anything.
Yeah. Yeah, he was one of the first guys I've ever seen do that. What the hell was that?
Really, there was so many little things like that he did, too.
And he did one where he'd grab the rope, and you'd be working his arm, and you'd kick his leg, and he'd do a flip there.
Yeah.
We've all seen that one.
You know, my favorite moment, of course, is going to be, you know, Starrcade.
Yeah,
you know, that match we had was a hell of a match, man. And, you know, he let me lay out a lot of that, which was, again, super cool. Who the guy went out there and who started as a heel in the old school where the heel called the match. You know, by this time, people are discussing him. They're not laying him out to the degree that it is today. I did, but no one else did that. Savage did that. But back then, you talk about it, you know, the beginning, the middle, the heat spot, the, you know, the finish to go home. He let me lay out a lot of that, which was super cool. And then we out there, when you know where you're going, what you're doing, now you can improv to me super easily because I know where I am and I can pick it right back up where we had to go back to. And he gave me a hell of a match and he put me over in a way that I'll never forget, you know. It was the most memorable moment besides the first day we met. You know, because I was like, that put a button on it like nothing could. Very it was very much reminiscence for me when I go up to be the driver for the Honky Tonk Man and Jimmy Hart and Greg Valentine. And then 8 years later, Warriors come into WCW to work with Hulk. And me and Goldberg are sharing the main event spot with him.
Pretty crazy.
You know, like that moment and the moment with Kurt being the very first person I actually bond with in the AWA, and I win my first really major title. It's pretty amazing.
Well, we got a couple quick fan questions to get to, but before we do, I got to tell you all about a product that I know Diamond Dallas Page has got in his household. You see, science tells us that the best way to achieve and maintain consistent deep sleep is by lowering core body temperature. Temperature-controlled sleep repairs muscles after a hard day's work and improves cognitive function, so you always start your day feeling sharp and alert. And that's why we're going to talk about Chilly Sleep, because Chilly Sleep makes customizable climate-controlled sleep solutions that help you improve your entire well-being. It makes the Uller and the Cube sleep systems hydro-powered, temperature-controlled mattress toppers that fit over your existing mattress to provide your ideal sleep temperature. They keep your bed at the perfect temperature for deep sleep, whether you sleep hot or cold, and the sleep systems are designed to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, and they even give you the confidence and energy to power through your day. Dallas, I know this is in your household. How has it changed things for you guys?
Well, for starters, I'm still waiting for mine, Chilly Sleep. My wife loves it, and I've had to, when she's not there, I sleep on her side of the bed.
There you go.
Wow. Because she hasn't, you know what I love the most? It's like, it doesn't go on until you set it on your app, on your phone. So it does come on right when, you know, it doesn't like jump in where it's cool. It's as you start to warm it up. Now you want to cool it down, especially when you're sleeping. I'm always searching for the other side of the pillow.
Yeah.
Like one of my lines used to be cooler than the other side of the pillow. Well, when you got a Chilly Sleep bed, you don't have to worry about that. You can make it cool whenever you want it to be.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I love most about it. And again, it's one of those things that go with a really comfortable bed. You know, you're not just in a comfortable bed. Now you can chill it down when you need it chilled down.
Absolutely.
Or when you don't want it that way. If you walk into a warm, you know, a cold bedroom, because sometimes I'll have the AC pumped up, I want to get into a warm bed. And then as soon as that temperature settles in, then I want the bed to be cool.
Makes your life nice and easy.
After some serious action in that bed.
Well, you can head over to chillysleep.com/DDPsnake.
Oh, you mean when she's out of town?
Oh,
no. I knew he was behaving too much on this episode. I knew we had to get something in there. Head over to chillysleep.com/DDPsnake to learn more and save 30% off the purchase of your new Cube or Uller sleep system. This offer is available exclusively for DDP Snake Pit listeners and only for a limited time. That's Chilly, C-H-I-L-I, sleep.com/DDPsnake to take advantage of our exclusive discount and wake up refreshed every single day. Let's get some questions in here, guys. We got one from Graham. He asks, lots of people think Kurt should have held the world heavyweight title. Personally, I don't think he needed it. Do you think it was important for Kurt to have held it?
You know, I always hate when people say, I don't think you really needed it.
Yeah.
You know, because I think that, like, Jake should have been a 7-8-time world champion. Should have been. You know, and he just happened to be in an era where a guy held it for one, but Hulk held it for 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, it was a different time then. But if he was in my era, you know, he would have held it multiple times. And, you know, I think that a lot, you're right, certain guys don't need it. But to me, I think that it's a payoff to
hard work.
Yeah, all the hard work that's there, and all the guys who didn't, and like whether it's Jake, Scott Hall, DiBiase, Mr. Perfect, Roddy Piper, there's five right there, you know, that all should have been world champions at one point or another. So, you can argue that don't really think you needed it. Yeah, but if you want to be the guy, you need it.
Yeah. This is a great question from Yambag Jones, and I was going to ask you about this anyway. He says, why don't you guys think that his son, Joe Hennig, also known as Curtis Axel in WWE, ever got to the main event level? He had a good run in WWE, a couple of title runs, but I think a lot of people would have seen him checking a lot of boxes.
I thought he was really good. I didn't understand it. I don't understand why a lot of things get done there sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, what sticks out to me the most is, like, why wasn't Bray Wyatt the one who stopped Taker's streak?
Yeah.
because then you're just going to keep him going and him take on the streak. I don't know why, you know, personalities, you know, politics. I don't know why, yeah. But I don't know why they do certain things. I thought Joe is a hell of a talent. And again, third generation wrestler who understood the business. And he was good out there in the ring and he could have been exceptional.
Are you feeling stuck making minimum payments on your credit card debt? SaveWithConrad.com can help, and you don't need perfect credit or money out of your pocket to do this. NMLS number 65084, equal housing lender. Oh, and did I mention no house payments for 2 months? Get rid of your credit card debt and lower your monthly payments right now at SaveWithConrad.com.
Eric wants to know, have either of you wrestled a better bump taker or a bumper than Hennig? Do you think anyone in the history of the industry is better than him?
Yeah. Back in the day, there was a guy called Mike Boyette, the hippie Mike Boyette, and he was the most incredible bumper I've ever seen. If he got pissed off at somebody, he'd go out in his match, and he'd kick the lights out above us. So they'd have to halt the show to put new lights in. You know, he could fly, man. I seen him take a backdrop from Andre in a double ring battle royal from one ring to the other ring.
Wow.
It was amazing.
Yeah, what about you, Dallas?
It was really great. Pat Tanaka.
Oh, yeah.
Pat Tanaka. You've never seen a flat back bump faster than Pat.
Yeah.
And the look, I can remember if this is his quad and this is his, his shin, you could take his knee back then and he could do this one.
Yeah.
And this is in 1988.
Yeah.
And he wrestled long in the mid 2000s.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, he wrestled, if you saw him, you would never think anything was hurting on him. And of course, Dolph Ziggler, you know, incredible worker, you know, and Jake would say, don't make the guy look too good because then that's a tough job to get out of, you know, like make him look good, but don't make him look too good.
Yeah.
Ziggler takes it to a different level, but it's a different level that these guys wrestle at today. They're much better athletes than we were. Mind-boggling to a certain degree. But those three guys, you know, pretty damn good.
Last question for you here. This is from...
Wait a minute. Chris Canyon,
okay.
Unbelievable bumper. Okay, go ahead.
I'd agree with that. Last question. This comes from Mike. Who do you think Kurt would have enjoyed a match with on today's AEW or WWE roster?
Anyone he wanted to.
Yeah, really.
I think that I would love to see him as a heel with someone like Kenny Omega.
Oh.
You know, and because Kenny can do anything.
Yeah.
But as a heel that the heel calls the match.
Yeah.
And I would love to see what that match would look like. Because Kenny is one of the greatest athletes ever. He's another guy, I watch him, and I get sore watching his matches from some of the abuse he puts his body through. But I would love to see if someone like a Kurt Hennig, who really was a master of less is more and slowing down, and the reaction that those two would get would just be insane.
That would be an incredible match. I have to go with you on that one.
Really would.
I'll give you one in each. I'll say in WWE, I think he and Randy Orton would have had such a fun psychological little match.
100%.
Yeah.
Can you imagine him taking an RKO? How great that would have looked. I mean, he took the cutter, so we know how that looks. And then in AEW, he and Dax Harwood. He and Dax Harwood have had such appreciation for the art. I just
You're right there. That's pretty damn
that's
good.
Good call too.
Who gave you those? I know you didn't come up with that shit.
I may have a call with Dex Harwood later today, so maybe this is great, guys. I'm so glad we got to celebrate the career of Kurt here. He's an all-time great heel in my opinion, and next week we are talking working like a babyface, and we're going to get some wrestling psychology discussion in here. We're going to learn from the very best. And that's why I can't wait for the next episode of DDP Snake Pit. Anything else you guys want to throw out there this week?
Goodbye. Cameo. Hey, Cameo. You want to see get something for me and Jake on Cameo? Go to cameo.com.
We appreciate you guys. Yes, absolutely. Go get your cameos now. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to this week's edition of DDP Snake Pit. We'll see you next time.